Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Next Tuesday, voters go to the polls to pass judgment on the Columbus City Schools levy. If approved, the levy is expected to generate $76 million a year. Columbus City School leaders and city officials say the 9.1 mil levy will go to improve the district's failing report cards, expand pre-kindergarten classes, and prepare high school students for adulthood, and many other things. Opponents say there are not enough details, that the district hasn't earned a raise, and that the ongoing investigation of the data rigging in the district should be finished before moving on with such a project. Joining us now to talk about the proposal is Rhonda Johnson. She's president of the Columbus Education Association, which represents teachers and other types of Columbus City Schools employees. The Columbus Education Association supports the levy and the related proposed reforms. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with us by phone is the interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Dan Good. Dan has been on the show before in support of the levy and proposed reforms. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann.
Rhonda, a frequent question I hear is, why should voters approve a levy that raises $76 million a year when they still don't have all the facts about the data rigging scandal? Why not wait until that's resolved?
Well, let's think about that. Not one teacher or one student was involved in the data rigging scandal. And people who are guilty of that will be dealt with by the justice system. But for now, we have to take care of our students. We have a great city. And we want to have great schools in our city. And that's why we need the raise. This levy is not about the status quo or business as usual. This is a complete reform or transformation of our school district, which is sorely needed. We need all of our students to be prepared when they graduate. And businesses want the same thing. They want our students prepared to work, to get their own businesses, to go to college, or to go into the military.
This was such a big scandal, though. It's still unresolved. You say no teachers or students were involved, but the investigation, and be that as it may, let's assume that, the investigation is still ongoing. People don't know what the resolution is.
We don't have time to wait for the resolution to the scandal. We need to move on. The scandal will be dealt with. But in the meantime, we have students who are in schools every day, so we can't wait for that.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Columbus City Schools levy with Interim Superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Dr. Dan Good, and also Rhonda Johnson. She's president of the Columbus Education Association. Dr. Good, lack of detail in the proposed reforms is another common concern. That people don't know what you mean by expanding pre-K. They don't know what you mean by a lot of things. There are concepts put out there, but actual details about how you'll achieve those goals are not necessarily what people would like to see. That's what they say.
I think, Ann, that in this particular levy, there's an opportunity to engage the public and the private sectors in defining what that pathway looks like. We've made a commitment to establish advisory councils on early childhood, advisory councils on human resources, advisory councils on technology, so that we can bring all of the best minds to the problem. But there's really little motivation to do that if there aren't the means to actually implement a solution, a shared solution. And we need to move away from the belief that the education industry owns all of the intellectual capital related to solving these problems.
I think people in the communities have said, well, yeah, you'll have all those committees after the fact, but am I going to be involved in it? Are ordinary people going to have a hand? Are they going to have a say? Or is the levy the only way they have a say is to provide the money?
People are already involved in it. We've been to almost 200 different community organizations, civic associations, faith organizations, some nonprofits, some business organizations, and they've given us input, and we've acted on those recommendations. We began down at the Marion Franklin Civic Association area in response to their desire to have a library within walking distance of their families. The community, or the Columbus Metropolitan Library, partnered with us, used a space that was available in one of our vacant sites, and we'll be establishing that satellite program so that the children have homework help centers and additional resources right there within walking distance of their homes. That's just one example of multiple examples I could give you from across the city where we are engaging our communities. And I'm proud that they come forward and ask the tough questions and share in the solution seeking. So I believe we've demonstrated that we want the community to be engaged. We want the community to help us define those solutions.
Rhonda Johnson, for example, expanding pre-K education. No one disagrees. I haven't found anyone yet who disagrees that it's
one of the most important things, one absolute fundamental. But there's no concrete plan for it yet. People don't know where the teachers are going to come from, where they're going to teach at, what buildings they're going to be at, how students will be chosen to participate as the program rolls out. So somebody who has a three-year-old child today, there's absolutely no guarantee that their child will be one of the ones that benefits from the pre-K expansion. There, people wonder, why should I vote for this if I don't know where I stand in it?
Well, there's been a lot of work around preschool education in the community for a very long time. Janet Jackson has done a lot of work. Tani Crane has done a lot of work. And there's already been an early childhood council together, been working for years. Even before this levy or the one that was considered last year. So we are working on those details, and we are now partnering. I would imagine that it's going to be the students who need pre-K the most. Students are already being identified through one of the United Way programs, Ready, Set, Learn. And so we've identified students who need it the most, and I would imagine it would be that. There are buildings where we're going to have preschool education. There are spaces already. We have buildings where we could actually have preschool centers now. And the other thing is we can partner with current preschool programs to make sure that those are high-quality programs.
Some people are worried that, say, like with the Affordable Care Act, there aren't going to be enough doctors to serve all the people once you expand access to healthcare. There aren't going to be enough teachers that are properly trained and credentialed to handle this influx.
I think there are enough teachers. Okay. The state of Ohio is an exporter of teachers. There are not enough jobs in the state of Ohio. There are fewer positions available, so our students have to go outside of the state. So I disagree that we don't have enough teachers to fill those programs.
And could I also comment, too? And I think Sure. so many of these topics blend together because mm-hmm. what we have heard, for example, in the Near East area and the Old Orchard areas, are the need for more of that early quality pre-kindergarten education. We are opening two additional preschools at the Ohio Avenue. They'll be Head Start programs, so we've partnered with CDC to make that happen. We had conversations last week with Childhood League about expanding up into the northeast area of our district at Brookhaven, where we have space, and certainly there's a lot of research to support a very mutually beneficial relationship when you have those early learning centers in the same setting as secondary schools so that they can work together, and those peer models are very, very strong. So we are already forging those partnerships. We opened 10 new preschools of our own this year, and we have an 88.4% readiness rating for graduates of Columbus City Schools preschools.
How many preschools or programs like that you said you're opening 10 new ones this year, how many would you be opening up anyway without the levy?
There are presently 4,907 kindergartners, so I'd have to do that math. But it isn't necessarily Columbus City Schools preschools. Mm. We're working with other private providers as well, recognizing that even if we used all of the space available in our existing facilities, we still have an obligation to work together with other providers to have those high standards, shared materials, shared training. In fact, I left a conversation this morning with the Dean of Ohio State University's College of Human Ecology and Education about that demand for highly qualified educators being met with our university partners.
Pre-K programs usually teachers aren't paid as much in those programs because they're often not is well educated and they don't have the same credentials. Rhonda, I mean, would anyone in this program being paid through this program?
If they're employees of the Columbus City School District, then they will have teaching credentials, and they're part of our bargaining unit, and yeah. they're on the salary schedule.
What about the private
teachers?
Entities?
Private entities pay differently, but it doesn't mean that they can't be high quality. We have to help them to make sure that they are. You know, one model could be a preschool coordinator helping other preschools mm-hmm. where the credentials might only be an associate's degree. We can support them without necessarily having credentialed people in those private programs.
Per pupil spending in Columbus actually compares favorably to what are considered well-off suburban districts like Bexley, Upper Arlington. Dr. Good, does higher per pupil spending make that much of a difference ultimately?
Not necessarily. One needs to look at the programs. We also need to look at our comparison groups, which are the other urban districts, both in Ohio and across the nation. And we're in the middle of the pack when we look at those total expenditures per pupil. So it's how those dollars are used, obviously, and whether we can show a return on investment. And that's certainly one of the guarantees of this levy, that we're looking at only those high-performing schools and the programs that are making a difference. And many of those programs are partnership programs, whether that be with Johns Hopkins University and City Year and Diploma Now and other entities that are providing some of those wraparound supports, or communities and schools, or the Metropolitan Library. I could go on, but we're looking at those programs to ensure the investments we're making there are ones that we can scale to other schools to guarantee the same high results.
In mid-October, the district treasurer announced that instead of a deficit, the next school year budget is in the black, as in $51.1 million in surplus. The change was said to be the result of a windfall from the state, improved local property tax collection, and a larger-than-expected end-of-year carryover. Dr. Good, why can't we expect similar conditions going forward, or why not wait at least until the year after when they have to address it?
You know, the caution is always when looking at a forecast such as that, it is a snapshot at one point in time, just like the achievement assessments are. It's a snapshot on a particular day. With that carryover, we have to remember that as a result of reducing expenditures by $15 million this year and other efficiency acts, there are $36.5 million we're able to carry forward. So not all of that is new money. And certainly some of that money is being used once again to address what we're hearing in the community, that we do not want primary age split classrooms, that we need additional nurses and counselors, that we need better mentoring for our leaders in the program and more mathematics support and more literature materials and more library media specialists. And so we've made those adjustments in our budget using some of that carryover, but at the same time guaranteeing that we won't be back to the community until 2018 for a new ask. So we're being more efficient while being effective. We're being transparent and also attempting to be trustworthy by making certain these are responsive to what our community is asking for.
Okay, my guests, Dr. Dan Good, he's interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools, and Rhonda Johnson, she's president of the Columbus Education Association. We're talking about the Columbus City Schools levy that will be on the ballot next Tuesday. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Columbus City Schools levy that will be on the ballot next Tuesday. My guests, Interim Superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Dr. Dan Good, and also in the studio with me, Rhonda Johnson. She's president of the Columbus Education Association. They represent the teachers and other types of Columbus City School employees. Rhonda, what about the plan to fund charter schools? The way they are explained in the frequently asked questions section of the website for the levy, they sound like they're going to be sort of a cross species or a hybrid of some sort. Are you comfortable? Usually public school teachers aren't comfortable funding charter schools.
Well, I think what we're not comfortable is funding schools that lack accountability. And that's certainly what we have here in the state. And we have some of the weakest charter school laws in the country. There's very little accountability. What we're talking about in this levy is holding those charter schools accountable who want to participate in education innovation. They have to be high-performing schools. They have to be schools that agree to locate in communities where there aren't high-performing schools already. We are for accountability. We're not opposed to charter schools, but we're opposed to not having accountability. Our parents are already making choices about leaving our schools. We have 15,000 students who are leaving our schools to go to charter schools, and most of them are failing. What we want to do is to provide a better option for parents so that they understand these are the high-performing charter schools. These are the choices that you should make instead of the choices to send your child to one of the failing schools.
When you talk about the idea, Rhonda, that they have to agree to relocate to a neighborhood where they're needed, this could be they're nonprofit, of course. That's one of the requirements.
Yes.
They could be coming from Cincinnati or Cleveland or another city where they're high-performing.
every city's different, and it seems like charter schools, and we've seen it with there are different examples out there where they work really well in one city. They work well in Austin, or they work well in Houston, but they don't cut it in Columbus or in Cleveland.
Well, there are some, though, that do work around the country. KIPP is an example of charter schools that work in Columbus, that work in New York, that work in Texas, and other places around the country. So, but we're not attracting those kinds of schools to our school district and to our city. What we have are, you know, schools that close and reopen under a different name. There's very little accountability. So we're not attracting good schools because, for one thing, there's not enough funding for them to be able to locate here. You know, it's hard to get a building, and you know, many of those schools are in, you know, previous furniture stores and warehouses and those kinds of places. So this is not an attractive market for high-quality schools. So I believe that we can help attract them through what we're doing with the levy and with the mayor being able to sponsor some high-quality schools. This is what I care about. I care about every child in Columbus and everywhere else for that matter, because I'm a teacher, having a high quality education.
Are you worried that this could be expanded over the years? And is there anything in the discussions about bringing the teachers into the union, Ohio Education Association or
Representative Assembly of the Ohio Education Association voted a couple years ago to organize teachers in charter schools. I'm not sure if they've organized anyone already, but it has been granted through the Representative Assembly. The OFT has had the
Federation
authority,
of Teachers. Mm-hmm.
Yes, has had the authority to organize charter schools. And if you, depending on where you go, they may or may not be members, or they may be organized. For example, in New York, some of those teachers are organized and they're part of the UFT in New York. In California, you have the Green Dot Schools, and they're members of the National Education Association. So it depends, and certainly they could be members. They have the right to organize because they are public employees. Whether they choose to organize or whether OEA chooses to organize them, that's up in the air.
Dr. Good, as far as the charter schools go, besides the accountability measures that would be put in place, what else do you think will be different about these charter schools from what's generally out there?
I think we've already seen a difference. We've had a couple of meetings already to help coordinate services and be more collaborative in terms of how we get students to school and from school, the materials and the best practices that we're each able to offer the other. It's a different conversation than would have existed previously.
Is this being brought into the discussion, the whole charter schools thing, just because 15,000 kids are leaving the district and you know they're leaving, so you might as well, if you can't beat them, join them? Is that part of what this is about, that you know people are heading to charter schools anyway, so why not bring them into the fold?
Not at all. I think, at least from my perspective, it's not. And it's that everyone that goes into this industry to support the growth and development of students is motivated altruistically, and we all want the best so that every child can achieve their potential, whatever that may be. And as Rhonda eloquently stated, that may mean going on to college or opening a business or working for someone else or entering the military. We all have that same objective, and why shouldn't we share resources and best ideas?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Some of the funding will go to pay for a new independent auditor who will be selected by a group of five, I think, community leaders. The idea is that the current internal auditor is beholden to the administration and the school board, I guess. Won't an external auditor be beholden to whoever hires him or her? Aren't you just changing, I guess, one set of overlords for another set of overlords? Rhonda, can you explain that? What's the difference in the long run as long as that auditor has to answer to somebody?
I don't see them as having to answer to somebody. We have some appointed positions in the state who answer to the public, and they don't necessarily answer to the governor, even though they may be appointed by the governor, like an inspector general who's responsible for making sure there's ethical behavior in the state, you know, in state offices. But there are five people who will select the auditor. Those are not their lords, but they're selected by them. And it would take four of the five in order to remove that person from office. Now it takes pretty much a vote
of four people, of the seven people on the Board of Education, and generally it's unanimous when that decision comes down. It usually comes from the president of the board about the continued employment of the auditor. And so while they're working directly for one person, that's very easy to manipulate when you're working for a single entity as opposed to five different ones. And they're not really, I don't see them as like answering. I see them as being the watchdog and not having to worry about the school board, which people are concerned about, the school board looking over their shoulders.
And I would add to that as well, and I agree with what Rhonda has shared. But these are public dollars, again, that will be flowing to high-performing schools, some of which are not sponsored by the district. And so there does need to be a level of accountability there as well. And this independent auditor could provide that accountability, not just from a fiscal auditing perspective, but from an academic and operational perspective as well. And I think it's important. It's what the community's been asking for. They want to be certain we root out fraud, waste, and abuse. And this is a way to do that. It kind of takes us back to the beginning of our conversation and the whole issue of the data scandal. And we need to acknowledge that a number of things have happened. We have a very cooperative relationship with the state auditor. We have new policies in place that Mr. Yost has identified as model for the state. We have limited the access to data. We've centralized how that data is entered into the system. And we brought in someone with a known track record of highly reliable practices to ensure that that data is valid and verified. And so in addition to that, there are a number of individuals that are no longer with the district that were named or at least implicated in that data scandal. So we have had a parallel track, but we also honor that the justice system will have their own actions that take place. And so both of those things are occurring simultaneously, but we have addressed those data issues.
One of the people that's still with the district is the current district auditor, who a lot of people are crediting with bringing the whole data rigging scandal to the fore in the first place. Weren't things already working when it comes to being able to report? Wasn't it the problem with the people she was reporting to?
I wasn't here then. I can't answer that, Ann.
Rhonda?
Well, you know, that happened in the administration, and, you know, we're not privy to the investigations of the auditor. I don't attend those audit and accountability meetings, so...
Will you be able to attend them when the new... external
I
auditor.
I did not. Those meetings are open, but I did not attend. I wasn't aware of the data scandal until the news broke. I had a conversation with Bill Bush a year ago, and he said, "Do you know anything about, principals, re-enrolling kids and disenrolling kids?" And of course, I wouldn't have a clue about that. The teachers had no knowledge of what was going on. But it's really not about the person who's in the office. It's the way that the position runs. And you know that there have been a string of these internal auditors dismissed for one reason or another. And so we certainly don't want to continue down that path of a Board of Education not liking the results of an investigation or an auditor. And then they're subject to, being let go as a result of that.
Everyone agrees that having an auditor of one stripe or another is a really, really important function in the school district, obviously. It sounds like, though, or it looks like you're talking about creating a whole nother bureaucracy, Dr. Good. You're going to have a whole nother office. There's going to be more to it. There's going to be a lot more people at work in this job. There's going to be more. Can the district afford that?
I think the question is, can we not afford to do that? We have made a commitment to regaining the public's trust, to strengthen our own operations, to be more accountable and transparent to parents and taxpayers. This exists, as Rhonda indicated, in every other form of government. So this actually models what is a best practice already. And I think it is important. I think it's important that we have that independent set of eyes. I don't view it as an additional set of bureaucracy. I don't view it as a new board to whom I report. I view it as an objective set of lens to help ensure that my tax dollars are being spent as they're intended to be spent.
The Columbus Schools PTA Council voted to oppose the levy. Rhonda, from where you sit, what is the significance of this, and are you concerned that they oppose it?
I think the vote was not to endorse as opposed to oppose.
Okay.
I think that was the vote.
Okay. Sorry about that, but
it would have been better if, you know, the PTA had chose to endorse our levy. But it's not, the PTA is not representative of all the parents in the district. I think there were 25 to 30 members, and not all schools have PTA. Some have PTOs. So that's one group of people who we didn't get the endorsement. But that does not mean that parents don't endorse and support the levy.
I think, too, any perspective is a legitimate perspective, and we learn from that. We need to do a better job of educating all of our citizens, parents included, what this levy is about and how it would or would not benefit their children in this community at large.
There are the levy proponents have promised that local business leaders will step up to the plate, I guess, to help fund these reforms. They have already spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on the campaign. How do you know? How do you trust that they will follow through after the levy or if the levy is passed?
I think we already have evidence that they're willing to do that. We can look at the recent American Electric Power $5 million grant over 5 years to Columbus State Community College that'll benefit Columbus City School students in STEM programs so that they can earn credit for both college and high school at the same time so that middle schoolers can be exposed to those careers that exist right here in Central Ohio that will benefit, of course, AEP. We have investments from Nationwide. We have investments from Huntington all the way down to Panera and White Castle. And the list goes on and on, and I always fear beginning down that path because I know I've left out some of those wonderful partners that have supported the district in the past and have pledged to continue their support in the future. This is a reform agenda. It is a public-private partnership. We have to work together. The district cannot do it on its own. That's been demonstrated in district after district after district. And we have failures in the past, and they're the catalyst for the changes recommended now. And they're supported overwhelmingly by civic business, educators, the faith community, social service agencies, labor, and the list goes on there as well. And what we want to do is make certain we can tap into that momentum and sustain those changes with passage of this levy.
When community leaders, unelected community leaders, invest millions of dollars in the district, Rhonda Johnson, any concern that you'll start to lose control or the district will start to lose control of its own?
I don't think that we're losing control of anything. I think what we're doing is collaborating and we're partnering with the business community because they want an educated workforce. And that is our job to provide that. So it's not about control. It's about partnering with the business community. They want the same things that teachers want. We want our students to be successful, and they want successful employees. They want businesses in the community. We don't want businesses to have to relocate to other cities because we can't provide the workforce for them. And we don't want our students to leave the city to have to go somewhere else to get those great jobs. So we're all in this together. I was at the Metropolitan Club yesterday, and Stephanie Hightower talked about when she was on the board that she wanted the business community involved in our schools, and they weren't. But now they're at the table, they're involved, and we want them to stay at the table because education is everybody's business here in Columbus.
We need to be responsive, too, to the market, and mm-hmm. the market is telling us the jobs that exist now require our partnering, for example, with the Electrical Trades Union and the Sheet Metal Workers Union, any of the other dozen building trades industries. And so we need to be listening to what that workforce demand is and making certain we're preparing our community's children with their tax dollars to take those jobs, continue to live here, continue to invest in this community, and continue to make the capital city one of the finest in the nation.
You want to use some of the revenue to replicate the best practices of schools in the district that are successful. Those are the ones that are often forgotten in this equation. But Dr. Good, from coming into the district like you have and taking the reins, why can't they just replicate the best schools anyway? Why does it take more money to do that?
one size is not going to fit all. If you go to Northeast or Northwest Columbus or Northeast, the Southwest, Southeast, the needs are very different. The neighborhoods have different expectations, and we have to be responsive, again, to our customers, to our clientele, whether they be employers or whether they be the families that live in these neighborhoods. For example, when we met with the Near East Area Commission, it's important to them, for the families that have lived there for generations, mine included, that we continue to educate our children that attend those schools in those neighborhoods about the rich culture, the rich legacy, the traditions in those communities. That isn't going to work necessarily in another area of the city. So we have to be responsive and be willing to customize, to tailor the programs to the neighborhoods that are served. And you know what? It's no different than how we've seen education change. We have to provide a more customized, more tailored experience to each of our learners now, because most of the content they access is available online. And so we become facilitators of how they deal with that stimulant, how they make sense of it and format it and communicate it and apply it and evaluate it. And it's no different when you're working on the macro as when you're working on the micro level.
And finally, Rhonda Johnson, Columbus City Schools does not compete well necessarily with teacher pay when you look at the surrounding schools, even if you have a master's degree or even if you have a PhD. The other districts seem willing to pay teachers more. To what extent do you think that should be a component of how the money is spent going forward?
I think, you know, of course,
pay teachers more.
But I think what matters more, what matters more than that, because I've been in a school district for 36 years, and there are a lot of teachers who've spent their whole careers here. What matters a lot, though, is the building principal and the leadership in that school will make me stay in that building even if my pay doesn't compete, because I want to work in Columbus. I want to teach urban children. Yes, the pay should be more, but it has to be more than that.
And Dr. Good, if Columbus City Schools are going to be straight-A schools, why shouldn't they pay the teachers what the other high-performing districts are paying their teachers?
Exactly. And thank you, Ann. You're now on the bargaining team.
So. What do you pay? No, I'm just kidding. So, but really, I mean, people have been arguing about teacher pay now for the last several years, saying that they're paid too much. They only work 9 months a year. It's a tough job. Why is this an issue?
You know what? I think what we need to do a better job of is making certain we provide all the right conditions so that teachers can be successful with any student that they're given. And, of course, there's great variability in any classroom of a regular education teacher or a teacher of record for students and different needs. And I believe inherently that given the right tools, the right materials, the right training, our teachers can help every child achieve a year's worth of growth. And when they're able to demonstrate that, and whenever we have appropriate tools to measure that, because they don't all exist at this point, then indeed we ought to compensate them on some meritorious schedule. And so that's my personal philosophical belief. But again, we need to make certain we're honoring what the whole community and each of the constituency interests within are saying.
And really briefly, we're absolutely out of time, but what about the parent component? There's the teachers, very, very important, but nobody disagrees either that the parents are the most important thing. That's the most important thing of all, but you can't force parents to do anything, Rhonda.
Well, but we can help them. We can't force them, but we certainly can help them.
Help them more than you already are.
We can help them to help their own children. One of the projects that we're doing as a union is home visits in the Briggs and Linda McKinley feeder patterns. So if you can't take Muhammad to the mountain, you take the mountain to Muhammad. So we're working on the issue of parent involvement. But that is so great, and it's really a key component is to have parents involved. But we still have to do our work, whether they're involved or not, but we certainly have to work on making sure that they're at the table and whatever that takes.
And I haven't met a parent yet that doesn't want to be a good parent. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they just don't have access to the same, again, all of the same things that every other parent may have. And so something we've heard consistently across the community is make our buildings available, please, so we can come and utilize the technology. We can come and utilize the libraries, have our pickup tournaments in the gymnasiums on the weekends and in the the evenings. And this is something that the levy would accommodate.
Dr. Dan Good, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Dan Good, he's interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools. And Rhonda Johnson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Rhonda Johnson is the president of the Columbus Education Association. Coming up, we're going to hear from opponents of the Columbus City Schools levy. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Next Tuesday, voters go to the polls to pass judgment on the Columbus City Schools levy and bond issue. And the issue 50 is a proposed bond issue tax levy that would raise $9 million, some of which would go to fund the proposed independent auditor position. In issue 51, the levy would also fund high-performing charter schools, some sort of expansion of the district-run pre-K system, and other reforms intended to bring schools in every neighborhood into the high-performing category. Joining us now to explain why voters should oppose issues 50 and 51 is Christina McMenemy. She's a mother of Columbus City Schools elementary students and a PTA member and a parent volunteer for itsokaytovoteno.org. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also joining us is Dale B. Snyder, senior pastor at Bethel AME Church in Columbus. He's also a member of Citizens Against Issue 50 and 51. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you.
To what extent is the data rigging scandal affecting your opinion of the levy and proposed reforms?
Well, for me, it's more really an issue. It does affect us, and then it's a sense of trust with the district. I think this is a district that so far the administration has a large trust issue with a lot of the parents and community. And so it's hard with the current levy plan as it is, lacking in so many details, to approve a 24% tax increase strictly on the basis of trust us.
Yeah, I find it very difficult that when you can go from a $19 million deficit to a $51 million surplus, that's a $70 million turnaround in just a six-month period, then access to trust you. It's very difficult for me when I look at the state attendance and also grading record, and the whole school district is graded at a D. And you ask them critical questions. Why is the children performing so poorly? Let's set the data rigging aside.
Okay.
What is the primary reason that 90% of our students in Columbus Public School is failing? So you can't fix the problem until you know what it is. If I go to a doctor and my heart is hurting, I have to go to a heart specialist. So what is the critical reason that our schools are failing? I don't think it's budget. We realize now that there's not a deficit. I asked Dr. Good some very pertinent questions because I'm a numbers guy. I used to do construction estimating. Columbus Public School current budget is $1.3 billion. If you take that $1.3 billion and divide it by the amount of students, which is about 49,000 students, that's over $26,000 per student available at some capacity. If you take 25 students and you divide and you multiply that 25 students by $26,000, that's $650,000 for a classroom size of 25. Now listen, if you get a teacher, yes, I mean let's pay the teachers. I agree, let's give teachers raises. But currently, Columbus Public School System is only about $3,000 different between the median pay for those in Dublin, those in Upper Arlington. So we're paying them a comparable rate. It's hard for us to trust people when you look at the actual factuals, and you look at the facts that there's data rigging. What else have they not told us? In this plan, now they want us to, for the first time in the state of Ohio, to give money from property tax to charter schools. This will be a first. This is a very dangerous ground which they're treading upon. And for us, we're saying we got 2 years. You have enough money to hire 71 teachers, to replenish your janitorial staff and all the other people that you need. Show us, Dr. Good, this new board that will be elected, that you can do what you say you can do, come back to us, and then we can sit down at the table and find ways to engage the parents, engage the community, and make this a win-win for all.
Christina, you said that the number one flaw is that lack of detail. Mm-hmm. What level of detail would you expect? Is one of the issues that it's just such a broad array of of a proposal, or is it, do you like the ideas of the proposal, but just want more details on each idea?
There are some fantastic ideas in the Columbus Education Plan. The problem is that there, from those larger ideas, there aren't any details in terms of accountability. A lot of definitions are lacking. There's a lot of, for example, there's a lot of mention, and they were just speaking earlier about high-performing schools. There's no definition of what a high-performing school is. And knowing that ahead of time would be helpful to know, if you're going to start shaping other schools around these high-performing schools, what is a definition of a high-performing school? Because honestly, that's a very vague term. A lot of the accountability is also lacking, too, in terms of what happens if schools don't reach that A or B level status in 6 years. There's no accountability. There's no
plan B.
Yeah, there's no plan B. There's no there's not actually a consequence. And that's a problem because we want to know what happens if we don't meet our goals. There's a lot in there about in the plan about forming a lot of committees. A lot of higher-level administration positions being created. We hear them say that they're going to improve and hire better teachers, but there's no plan of actually how they're going to how many teachers are they going to hire, how many what is their plan for considering what is a high-performing teacher, and so it's concerning that there's a lot of detail in terms of committees they want to form and panels they want to form. And the administrative positions they want to form, but that they want to hire for, but there's nothing beyond that. Where's the money going that's going to actually benefit the students and the teachers?
Pastor Snyder?
And my concern is, number one, that the residents that will pay for this levy are seniors in the urban core, where my church is at, a 72% poverty rate, and they cannot afford this 24% increase. It's very difficult when you look at the plan and you ask for actual factual, like what type of curriculum are you going to use that will identify?
Well, let's separate that piece that you just broke out, which is they can't afford.
Yes.
One of the reasons why their property values are so low is because the school district is so low performing.
Well, the school.
Do you see a connection there?
No, there's no connection because the school district is not low performing because of income or because of finance.
No, they're not. But they're
low
reputation.
Performing. They're so low performing because people cheated, people lied, people broke the law, and people or those who we have a sacred trust did not perform their tasks well. So if I drive in a school bus and all of the students die, do I give you a faster school bus with a bigger engine and more money for you to disenfranchise other students? No, I must look at the critical path that caused those students to fail. And money is not the reason. Columbus is getting close to $15,000 for classroom instruction per student. And just think about this. I just want you to really think about it. Where is the money going? For 25 students at $15,000, that's $381,000 for a classroom of 25. We already own the buildings. So where is the rest of the money going? Accountability is the problem. Credibility is the problem. Really coming up with a model in Harlem, there's a Harlem's Children's Zone, where Harlem had a more critical problem than we have. Harlem turned their problem around with what's called wraparound services. So they look at all of the people that were touching the children and said, look, how can we make these money positive? Just think about it. A child that's, for whatever reason, misbehave, has a parole officer. That child would hold up a judge.
So the issue is you like that idea, but you don't know if that's what they're talking about with the Columbus Schools plan.
Right. The plan is not detailed. So when you ask them, you know, actual fact, okay, what curriculum are you going to use? Because currently the curriculum that you have is not working. Currently, you don't have textbooks in the schools for the students. And I asked Dr. Good and some of his people who were out in meeting with me, and I said, well, we do a lot of tutoring at my church and we work with students. And the problem I have is kids come home with worksheets and they don't have textbooks. So I don't know how to go back to chapter 2 or 3 or whatever and try to go forward. And they told me, well, the textbooks are only used as a resource. See, the problem we have in Columbus school system is how do you teach a student? And they have created many different models. If you talk to teachers, every 3 years or 4 years, they come up with a new, we're going to do this. We're going to group them. No, we're not going to group them. We're going to use this. We want to buy new instruction. And so what we've had is a process that have gotten away from the basic primary education of children at the elementary school levels. Our question is, why are we still busing children when the school district is 80% minority? So, you know, we have questions that are not being answered. We were told that there was going to be a parent component. There was going to be a neighborhood liaisons person in this piece of legislation that will connect.
And you're saying that there's not.
That's not going to be funded.
Okay. Levy proponents have promised that local business leaders will step up to the plate to help fund these reforms. They already have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, some of them, on the campaign. Mm-hmm. What is your sense about whether about that promise that the community will come through? Christina McMenemy?
I have issues with that just because, I think it's great that businesses are stepping forward and donating those hundreds of thousands of dollars to the campaign. A lot of parents are wondering, you know, where have they been? It's not like Columbus City Schools are brand new. We're not brand new. We've been here for a while. The parents have been there through good and bad. We're in the schools every day. We're there volunteering. We're there helping our teachers out, giving money when we can to support them. We're wondering where these businesses have been. And we also really wonder, are they going to actually stay if the levy doesn't pass? Is there any actual guarantee that these businesses are truly wanting to stay engaged with our children and actually see it through, or are they only doing it for some possible gain that we don't know about that is being handled through the levy?
I find it hard to believe. If you look at what the state Supreme Court said about funding in the state of Ohio is unconstitutional. I would love for the business community to fund a lawsuit against the state of Ohio to make them come up with a funding system that's fair for all students across the state.
Well, as long as I've been covering state government and politics, that has been an issue since 1990, 1989. So it's not that they haven't tried. I mean,
you raised 2.4 or whatever the final number may be, millions of dollars to put a issue on the ballot that's illegal according to the state constitution. So my question is, you know, why can't we come to the table to help all children, all communities? All of our communities are suffering with funding schools. This is a critical path. We're the largest school district in the state of Ohio. And if we want to solve this problem, let's solve it for all school districts. And let's sit down at the table of reason and come up with some solutions that will help all of us in the long term. Why are we continuously taxing seniors when we have given millions of dollars of break? I mean, look at what happened with the casino. We moved it from downtown, which they would have got a lot of money. Columbus Public School, well, Southwestern Schools is benefiting from that proposal. Look at Nationwide Arena. Nationwide Arena was supposed to be a win-win for us. Now the city bought Nationwide Arena, and we're not getting those revenues from that. So we have lost revenues going to our school district because the business community have gotten billions of dollars in tax breaks to build in other communities, and our mayor and our council have given those dollars away. So when you talk about, you know, they put up money, well, they got a lot of benefit from not paying their fair share to the Columbus Metropolitan School District that they should have paid.
Christina McMenemy, you say that there are elements of this proposal, maybe you don't exactly, that threaten the future of public education.
Mm-hmm.
The local teachers union is behind this. Mm-hmm. Why do you think they would back something that is such a threat to public education? Their bread and butter.
Right. And I should point out, though, that the teachers union is behind it in terms of the union's administration. But I know that as parents, I've spoken to several teachers. I've talked to several individual teachers who are very against it and are genuinely concerned. The education plan has language in it that would allow the city and allow the district to sponsor their own charter schools. Charter schools aren't at the same level of accountability that public schools are. And also, charter schools don't require their teachers to be as highly trained, and they don't require the union.
Well, they can't keep out the union, though, either, apparently. Now, I'm being corrected here. Nationwide Arena has agreed to continue tax payments to Columbus schools.
But if you remember the conversation, Nationwide Arena was sued by the Columbus School District because they wanted to devalue Nationwide Arena for many years. And finally, they're going to agree to their payment up to, I think, 2015. So my question to the business community is, we have a serious problem, not just in Columbus, but in New Albany and Black Lick and in all of our communities in the state of Ohio have an issue with funding our schools adequately. My concern is this innovation fund. This innovation fund is supposed to produce about $50 million a year. It's going to be appointed by this board is going to be appointed, not elected, who will do this private-public partnership. And when I asked who's going to sit on this board, well, the kind of comment I got back is those who put in the money. So if you look at the vested interest, $1.3 billion, you know, that's a lot of contracts that go out to business. They have a vested interest in the insurance contracts. That's close to $100 million in the electric contracts, which is, I don't know, in the millions of dollars, the utilities and so forth.
Okay.
I think one of the big issues is just...
You know what? I'm sorry, Christina, we're out of time.
Okay.
I really appreciate your answers to the questions. You've done a great job. Christina McMenemy, she's mother of Columbus City School Elementary School students and a PTA member and parent volunteer for itsokaytovotenow.org. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, Pastor Dale Snyder, pastor at Bethel AME Church in Columbus, member of Citizens Against Issue 50 and 51. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Well, links to all these organizations on our website at WOSU.org. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.